You're listening to Sound Poetry. I am your host, David Gilmore.
You're listening to Sound Poetry on Radio Tacoma, KTAH FM 101.9 LPFM. I'm Christy Niebel, filling in for David Gilmore. Today we're joined by Rena Priest. She is a poet and enrolled member of the Lummi Nation. She's been appointed to serve as the Washington State Poet Laureate for the term of April 2021 through 2023. She's a Vedan Foundation Fellow and recipient of an Allied Arts Foundation Professional Poets Award. Her debut collection, Patriarchy Blues, was published by Moonpath Press and received an American Book Award. She's an American National Geographic Explorer and a Jack Straw writer. She holds an MFA from Sarah Lawrence College. Rena, I saw you live and in a video presentation talking about your aim as a poet laureate. Would you like to talk about that?
I'm hoping to celebrate the beauty of the natural world through poetry and to visit tribes throughout the state. So this first poem that you mentioned that you were interested in is called Round Dance. I've heard that a triangle is the strongest shape. Okay, perhaps, but a circle will always circle back. For its reliable tenacity, nature loves a circle. A circle is relentless. We've been going in circles on this rock for eons, a fractal making songs as generations spin along, spinning out new variations with each turn in the cycle, new tyrants, new saviors, new hungers, new flavors, new, yet patently familiar. A drum is a circle, a community is a circle, a yurt, a turret, an igloo, a powwow, a pantoum, the hero's journey, a day, a year, the tides, the moon, an iris, a pupil, a nipple, a breast, one circle, a ripple into the next, an ovum, a cell, splitting like an atom, exploding, growing, arms, legs, joys, griefs, ascending and circling back, 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 all the way back to the tomb, dust and ash, you'll be back. Energy cannot be destroyed, only transformed. Is it a comfort or a horror? It's both, it's everything, and it would be overwhelming, but here we are again, where we retract to void, relax, let the song hold you wrapped. Nature loves a circle.
Yeah, that's a kind of a comforting notion. And as one who plays music a lot, I found it interesting that the notion of a circle as it relates to a song makes me think of the repetition of music connected to words and that they create memories that last longer than other things we try to learn, which is a part of the circle, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, for sure. Definitely.
It seems that the point at which we withdraw from the circle is where we realize we have to reconnect to the meaning of life.
I think it's important to acknowledge interconnections between things as well.
So you were going to do another poem, which to me is almost connected to the last one, Resonance?
Uh-huh. So this poem is called Resonance, and it has an epigraph by Anaxagoras, who says, "All things were together, the mind came and arranged them." The flicker of a wave on the sea is a flame, not like a candle on a cake, keeping tally of our days. Instead, the fire measures life together by the sweetness of resonance. How exalted by the dawn, we as one have sung our true song, become a single voice across the waves. The wax of a candle begins inside the humming darkness of a hive, but before that it begins as sunlight, calling forth blossoms, pollen, and bees. bees who play matchmaker to trees, calling forth fruit to become new seeds. Where does love begin? It is a surprise, but obvious and easy, like breathing. It has been here all along, a flicker on the sea that swam up from the deep to touch air and light, shine like fire, to leap from its element the way a tree becomes a boat so that the earth can leap into the sea and sail toward adventure. Things are changed, things transform. This is the way the mind arranged it. The mind comes and arranges. The heart draws it all back toward union, washes away the illusion of separateness, gives new measures for happiness, a new way to celebrate the state of being of one heart and one mind. Eit Hutschning, our song is a ferry that joins two shores.
To me, those two focus on the patterns of life that connect the heart to the spirit and to all things living. It seems like there again, where we have lost that sense of pattern and rhythm to life, is where we find alienation. It seems as if there's a sense of direction to a cure for alienation there. At least that's how I see it.
Yeah. So when I talk about how language contains the worldview of the people, there's a phrase in that poem, Eit Hutschning, and it means good feelings. It translates as good feelings, but it was explained to me that the way that that's understood is that when your heart and your mind are in resonance and there's no conflict between what you feel and what you think. And so it's in that state that you should try to be in when you're making decisions or interacting with other people, and to try to be of one heart and one mind with the people around you, so that good things can come. But, you know, that whole concept is so beautiful, that the way that they understood good feelings, it adds another layer to it for me, learning that.
Yeah, that's a beautiful poetic example of how you've gained spiritual strength from the language that translates nowhere to any direct word in the English language and yet can offer some sense of fulfillment.
Yeah, definitely.
I thought it was interesting also your references to the flicker in the wave. It just gave rise to me to thoughts of all the signs in the water that a lot of people are not aware of that can give direction. And I think, at least I heard this from Jonathan Rabin. I read a book called A Passage to Juno, that the indigenous peoples who were in canoes on the water were sometimes not moving at all because they were watching the water for signs as to whether they should go anywhere, because it could be a life-threatening situation. They were watching for signs of weather, reefs. If it was foggy, the water would tell them where the shore was. And so the water can be a pretty significant, all the little reflections in the water can tell a lot.
Yeah, it's really something. How I was visiting Wasanich Nation a couple of weeks ago, and there was an elder talking about the currents that people would ride and how you could be in one place in the islands and be in another entirely different place, kind of far away in the course of an afternoon, just by timing your trip with the currents. And we were just remarking on how, what an amazing thing, you know, to know as like, to have as part of your knowledge set, right? Where in Western education, there's a few things that we're expected to learn, you know, who the presidents are, who the explorers were, who the pilgrims were. We learn about the Mayflower. We learn algebra. all of these things that, you know, kind of don't have any real practical application in our lives versus what, you know, what my ancestors learned was how to time a trip on the tide so that they could get somewhere. And I for one know that that's super important. I was on the intertribal canoe journey a few years ago and we mistimed the tides. We didn't catch the tide and we were traveling against it all day and we pulled for 7 hours and we didn't really get that far. And, you know, I don't think we really got anywhere until the tide turned and brought us to where we needed to be, but it was a long day. And I think about timing and how important that is, but also just, you know, what we know and how does it serve us is, I think, a good thing to wonder about. Just some thoughts, I guess, talking about watching the water. Also, that image comes from, I think it's the teachings of Thich Nhat Hanh. Anyway, it's a Buddhist teaching that you're not that every flicker of wave on the ocean is a flicker, but it's also the whole ocean. And, you know, kind of talking about that interconnection again.
Right. And the notion of the mind arranging all those connections, that's an interesting thing to explore in that poem, too.
Yeah, it's really something, too, how, like, there's, like, language is one of the ways. So this is also... coming out of like Buddhist explanations, but that the heaps, that there are heaps, that the universe is arranged, is made out of these heaps. And one of them is language, that, you know, grasping the world and our awareness of the world, understanding it through language is like the mind arranging it to put a name on something. The word poet comes from the Greek for poesis, which is to make. And I always think that's interesting too. You build a world by naming it, and what you call a thing shapes how you understand it, right? So I think that's interesting.
Very interesting.
Maybe I'll read another poem?
Yes, please do. I was just about to say that.
Okay. This is called The Frolicsome Crests and Glistening. What is it then between us? Walt Whitman. There are 20 million pounds of gold suspended in normal seawater, spread out in parts per trillion. Gold is a good conductor of electricity, but seeing how it's sought, I'll bet it's the best conductor of a heart's deepest want. I once had a conversation with my daughter in which she asked, "Do you believe everything is connected?" "That depends," I said. "On what?" she asked. "On whether you're being spiritual or conspiratorial," I said. "Spiritual," she said. "Then yes, everything is connected." "How can everything be connected spiritually but not conspiratorially?" she asked. "Considering it, I believe the spirit conspires against our errant belief that we are separate. I might be you, you might be me. We might be the living sea with 20 million pounds of gold shimmering suspended between us, conducting our heart's deepest wants across frolicsome crests and glistening. And what else could it be if not a spiritual conspiracy?"
There again, I hear you making connections and patterns in nature and in human spirit, and I'm very attracted by that. It's a very appealing aspect to your poetry.
Well, thank you.
The use of gold is still a little bit mysterious to me.
Our eye is attracted to light. We seek it. And it's actually, I learned that it's an evolutionary response to seeking water, like, because water sparkles, right? So what else in nature sparkles the way that water? Well, leaves sometimes when they shimmer like that, they sparkle, but that, you know, I don't know, nothing else really sparkles like water. And so it was explained to me that that's why, you know, people are attracted to things that shine, gold, glittery jewels, things like that. The idea that there's gold in seawater, I think that's, I was just kind of playing with gold as a metaphor for the things that we chase and the things that we want, but also as a conductor. I happen to be married to an electrician. So this,
I was going to ask, you stumbled into this information that there's gold all over the sea, just floating around in the water.
Oh, no, that came, I don't know how, where did I first learn about that? I can't remember where I first, I read a lot of like weird science, and that was in a weird science article. And I kind of loved it because I thought about, you know, the gold part floating around and, you know, people look for it so much. And, but also everything else that's contained in seawater, like every mineral on the planet, I think is also contained in seawater. In some trace amount. And, you know, so copper, we use copper as the electrical conductor of choice. But I think if gold weren't sought for other things, it would probably also be used as a conductor, as a conductive material.
What I was thinking about is the relationship between that poem and Tour of a Salmonberry, which to me is also focused on capturing light.
Yeah, okay. I'll read this. Tour of a Salmonberry. A salmonberry is a luminous spiral, a golden basket woven of sunshine, water, and bird song. I'm told that the birds sing so sweet because of all the berries they eat, and that is how you can have a sweet voice too. In my native language, the word for salmonberry is alila. In Sanskrit, lila means God plays. Salmonberries sometimes look that way. Every year they debut, spectacular in the landscape, worthy of their genus name, Rubus spectabilis, meaning red sight worth seeing. Each drupelet holds a seed and the shimmering secret kept by rain of how to rise, float above the earth, feel the sun, and return.
Yeah, that talks about the spiral. I never really noticed that an individual salmonberry is a spiral. And you used the word drupelet, which is the name, I guess, for the individual fruit within the fruit that is the berry and holds the seed, right?
Yep, yep. And yeah, I loved learning that word. I didn't know that they had their own little name, each little orb on a berry. That's called a drupelet. And I think it's really beautiful. They glow, they glisten, they glitter like gems in the landscape. So I guess it's not just water in the landscape. I was mistaken. Berries also glitter, glitter like jewelry out in the forest.
Right, that's what I was getting to. It seems like those berries alone in our local forests seem to retain light within themselves.
Yeah, they do. They really sparkle.
Are you a picker?
Oh, yeah, for sure. yep, every year I try to get out and get some salmon berries.
Salmon berries, at least around here, are not all that plentiful. Have you found berry heaven?
Oh, no, I don't have berry heaven. I think berry heaven happens every time I find some berries that are.
That's what I'm talking about. Your own personal berry heaven.
Yeah. If I can find a few out on a trail or something, you know, then I'm in berry heaven.
Have you found enough to do anything with them, like cooking wise or?
Well, this is actually really, I'm going to tattletale on my husband, but when we bought our house, there were salmon berries the previous owner had planted salmon berries along the front and along the driveway. And they were like pretty healthy, fluffy salmon berry bushes. And my husband said, they look so messy. I'm going to get rid of those. And I said, no, you're not. And he said, yeah, I think I want to plant something else there. And I said, don't do it. So I went to work and I came home one day and they were all gone. I was like, oh my God. I just felt like it was really something. But I don't think he realized kind of how special they were. He's a city boy, so doesn't really, you know, the significance of it was, I think, maybe not, he just didn't know. But I was like, I felt a little bit of grief, so I still pinch him sometimes and give him a hard time about the salmon berries. But there's one left in the back by our gardening shed, so that's my salmon berry bush. I told him to stay away from it.
I'm a berry picker. When I have a freezer full of berries, I feel like I'm a rich woman.
Yeah.
Would you like to read another poem?
Sure. This poem is called The Glimmer. From darkness, the idea of self, blood, water, a soul, my body, a brief victory over death by making breath. Thoughts and actions in a series of moments expressed, a cup filled with bliss and the movement of breath, pulling itself into emptiness, water between stones, disappearing, how quickly it goes. I leave with my breath, I return with my breath, and I understand the tides. They are spun in currents by the exchange of breath. For kisses branded on flesh, we claim each with each, join names to our tongues, weld our memories to breath. In our chests, each moment dies for the next, singeing shut the spaces between each allotted breath, smelting our lives first into glitter, then into ash in this breathtaking glimmer above death, where we make breath. So, this is a little side note, but I just learned actually how the tides work. Cause I was, this is always a mystery to me, right? I did this thing. My second book, Sublime Subliminal, was the result of doing, this invented form by an Arizona poet named Jim Zimmerman. It's called 20 Little Poetry Projects. And one of the little poetry projects is something like, you know, explain something you don't understand or something. I think that's in there. It might've come from somewhere else, but like, you know, just like explain something through nonsense that you don't understand. And so that was kind of my little thing, is that, you know, explaining how the tides work, that they're spun in currents by the exchange of breath. And I learned recently from reading a book that I blurbed by another Washington poet named Scott Berry. It's coming out in October. I think it's called The Long Blade of Days Ahead. That's the title of the collection. But there was a poem in there and it explains how tides work, and it just completely blew my mind. Apparently, probably everybody knows this, but this is really exciting to me. Apparently, there is always like the moon. I knew that it had something to do with the moon, but the moon is always pulling on the water. And as the world turns, like we go through that bulge of water. And so the big minus tides and plus tides are from when the sun is behind the moon and creating like a heavier pull, or, you know, that it's lined up so that like the sun and the moon are both pulling on the water. And so that's the big minus and plus side. But yeah.
Yeah, I love when art can intercede to help explain things to people that would be otherwise difficult to comprehend. That I read that poem and I guess I was drawn to the dark side, because every time you came to breath, I thought of death, because it was such an easy rhyme there. But I'm glad you brought the light to the glimmer of it all.
Oh, well, thank you. That form, I wrote it to be a huzzle, but I didn't put my name at the end of it, and so I guess it's not a true puzzle.
It is interesting that that you brought light to the tiny little moment between breath and death, because, of course, if you've been to at the bedside of anyone who is in great peril, be it a newborn or someone who's dying, you're very, very much aware of that. I don't know if you have, but breath is such a intricate thing, and yet we don't think about it most of our lives.
Yeah. Is it the pineal gland? Is that what the one that they call the third eye? The little P-shaped gland in the center of our brain apparently makes light. Someone told me that it actually makes light, and I thought, wow, well, okay, so that would make sense for, like, when people do the near-death experiences and stuff, and they see light, even though I guess that's where that's coming from. Here I go, rambling again.
No, I think that's fascinating, and it does relate to the poem. It's pretty interesting stuff. Thank you for that.
Yeah. So one poem, this poem you asked about, you mentioned that you heard it and it made you laugh out loud. I think this is the one you were talking about, but I could be wrong. It's called Miracle of the Fishes. And I call it my blasphemy poem. I read it at Gonzaga. I was scared to read it at Gonzaga. And Todd Marshall was my host. And he said, no, just read it. I said, okay. So I read it, and you know, it was, they didn't ban me for life. So I guess that's good. The Miracle of the Fishes. I don't want to get into a thing where we're arguing about whose spiritual hero is better. But salmon are more powerful than Jesus. All salmon are born from virgins. Actually, they're born right out of the earth. Female salmon lay eggs in a riverbed. The males come and fertilize them. No male-female contact is made. How chaste. Young salmon make their journey to the sea and return to perform the miracle of the fishes. They spawn and die, and their nutrient-rich bodies and blood infused with the minerals of the living sea feed all living beings in the salmon's natal stream. A salmon needs only itself and its journey to perform this miraculous feat. This beautiful and holy communion between salmon and all living things has been happening longer than people have been on this planet. On the other hand, basic transubstantiation requires a priest, a church, an altar, a tabernacle, an altar boy, a glass of wine, a tray of wafers, a bell, a Bible, dogma, an initiated congregation, the Spanish Inquisition, a history of burning witches, a history of stealing and starving Indian kids, a history of holy wars, a history of displacing and murdering heathen Indians in the name of God in order to propagate a story about a boy born from a virgin whose body and blood we eat and drink so we shall be saved. Saved from what? Not from hunger or thirst, but from everlasting damnation in the burning pits of hell, which if I close my eyes to visualize, looks suspiciously like hunger and thirst on this broken and burning earth.
Well, it's not exactly funny, but I did laugh again. I'm so glad you didn't hold back with that poem. You got a lot in there.
You know, I guess like a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down, right? Like Mary Poppins says.
Well, as I say, the condensation of so much into a poem with Christianity is unavoidably juxtaposing a lot of violence to what people consider to be divine. You did it. It's amazing. It's wonderful.
Thank you.
And there's another poem I want you to read, which also has spiritual fish in it. And that's the charm of it. And that's Daybreak Song.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Here we go. And this has an epigraph. Fish recorded singing dawn chorus on reefs just like birds. New Scientist, September 21, 2016. Below the waves, even the unheard, unseen world sings. The sun lights the earth another day, and every living thing greets the dawn with its own primordial ritual. But not me, and probably not you either. I have no such ceremonies, only habits. In winter, I wake to alarms in the dark, feel my way to the snooze button, then light switch. The sacred celebration of another day on earth, the birds and fish singing, all of that happens as I sit in traffic and think of my ancestors, feel the heaviness of grief, wonder why I've wandered from my home where still at dawn the people wake, face east and sing.
I think anybody who just casually trots over that poem probably thinks this is a fanciful fantasy. But I had to look into it, and it's a startling notion that fish can sing. So I found them on YouTube, and I listened to them. There are not just one, but I think three species of fish who sing at daybreak.
Isn't that beautiful? And then the birds, they make such a beautiful song for us at the start of the day. But I do sort of miss waking up with the birds. It's a nice sound. It's a nice way to start the day. For sure.
I had chosen another poem of yours, For the Trees. Would you like to read that?
Yeah. So this poem is called The Forest for the Trees. I have seen a tree split in two from the weight of its opposing branches. It can survive, though its heart is exposed. I have seen a country do this too. I have heard an elder say that we must be like the willow, bend not to break. I have made peace this way. My neighbors clear-cut their trees, leaving mine defenseless. The arborist says they'll fall in the first strong wind. Together we stand. I see this now. I have seen a tree grown around a bicycle, a street sign, and a chainsaw, absorbing them like ingredients in a great melting pot. When we speak, whether or not we agree, the trees will turn the breath of our words from carbon dioxide back into air, give us new breath for new words, new chances to listen, new chances to be heard.
That's a very redeeming and elegant ode of love to the essential contributions of trees turning CO2 to oxygen.
Yeah, they're pretty great, aren't they? dismal reports about climate change and the world, and I thought, well, we won't have to worry about it much longer. sorry, it's not funny, but it kind of is, because it's just crazy. You know, there's no democracy without trees. And so I think if we could all get behind one thing, it should definitely be restoring health and livability to the planet.
I find a lot of hope in your poetry.
People are creative and amazing, and the earth, despite what we do to it, loves us, and there will be solutions. I think this is a nice little segue into ending our time together. It's called Before Clocks. To keep time meant music, the steady rhythm of a beat, the playful plucking of a string, the full throb of a drum sounding to the steps of feet. To keep time meant stillness, the steady passing of a day, no need for rush or delay in the fluid timeline of one's own way. To keep time meant tides, the waxing and waning of the moon, the easy pace of later and soon, the warmth of the sun declaring high noon. To keep time meant seasons, the rippling rings of a tree, the changing disposition of the sea, the migration of harvests leading us to where we need to be. And it always happened right on schedule. I'm starting to collect this anthology of salmon-related poetry. I was accepting submissions through email, but I'm putting out a link fairly soon on Submittable. Kind of maybe keep an eye out. It's going to be published on Empty Bowl Press. I'm working with Holly Hughes.
I know Holly. I interviewed her.
I'm really excited to be putting this project through Empty Bowl Press. It's going to be a lot of fun, I think. I'll be accepting poems, I think, through September.
Well, I want to thank you so much. This has been a real treat for us to have you as an interviewee.
Likewise, likewise.
You're listening to Sound Poetry on Radio Tacoma, KTHFM 101.9 LPFM. You are just listening to the poetry of Rena Priest, Washington Humanities Poet Laureate for this year, 2022 through 2023. I'm Christy Niebel, filling in for David Gilmore.